Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I am your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me as ever, all the way from Australia, is Oriol Puigdemont. And Yuri, it's been a weird season, 2020, and I think Bruno has been one of the most unexpected weekends of the year.
Yeah, I would say it has been the pinnacle of the unexpected races. But yeah, it's been really, really good and really interesting. I mean, yeah, we all said that this championship was going to be special, and that's for sure, it is.
Yeah, we had to wait, 4 months or whatever it was for it to get started, and it has not been disappointing. I don't even know where to start with this Bruno race, because there was just so much going on. But I suppose we should start with Brad Binder, because, I mean, this guy... 3 races, you know, in his rookie season, and he's already a Grand Prix winner. I mean, this is some Marc Marquez level of rookie performances. This is incredible from the South African.
Yeah, it's really, really good story. It's really good story because, he's not the kind of rider that you expect to do this at the first, let's say, yeah, in the MotoGP class, but in as we say in silence, he's been showing or sending some messages during the pre-season and during the first races, and then boom, suddenly in unusual and specific conditions, he was able to get the most of the situation, which is amazing.
Yeah, well, exactly. It was a normal race in terms of conditions and such, but it was a strange one as well because the track was so weird with grip and bumps. The tires weren't working sort of normally. But I remember at the start of the weekend, the MotoGP commentators, they said the Bruno conditions were prime Marc Marquez conditions. And what Brad did in that race was very much sort of what Marquez would have done in those races. He would have come to the front, he would have managed the conditions, he would have, you know, 5.2 second lead for Binder it's a day after the race, and I've already run out of superlatives for what a performance it was. It was special, I think, is the only word you can describe it.
The thing is that I wouldn't like to compare Brad with Mark, not because of nothing, but it just because, I mean, don't forget, Mark was not there. And I would say that I'm not saying that 100% it would have been another story, but I think that one of the main, conditions or special conditions for this win is that Mark was not there, because we all know that how Mark manage himself in low grip conditions, and when this kind of like problems like bumps and low grip affect to the others, he's the one being able to make the most of the bike. So, but let's put Mark aside. I think that Brad won as he used to do in Moto3, for example, or with this kind of style. I mean, with anyone being able to stop him or to even fight with him.
Yeah, for sure. It's a very good point you raised there that Mark wasn't there, and you know, it's impossible to say how the race would have panned out if he was there. But you know, the race is the race, and the conditions are the conditions. And at the end of the day, you've still got to go and ride the race. And, you know, I think we spoke about this earlier on, is that the result was a shock in a sense. You know, we didn't expect it to happen this weekend. It almost wasn't a surprise because we did see at Jerez that Binder had podium pace in both races before he, you know, after he made the mistake in the first race and before he crashed in the second one. And I was just looking through some of the lap times from Bruno of the 10 laps that when both KTM riders were in the race before Paul crashed out. You know, Paul was only quicker on three of those relative to Binder. So the pace has always been there. It's not as if it just appeared.
Yeah, I think it would have been a really close battle between them.
Yeah.
For the race. Because, yeah, we've seen Paul very, very competitive during the weekend, especially, I mean, he was the fastest on the warm-up. So, but the thing is that he was getting a bit, let's say, anxious. I don't know if it was because he was, I mean, following Brad. I mean, Brad was ahead of him,
yeah.
And he was feeling that Brad was really going faster. But yeah, I think that both had a really good pace over the whole weekend.
For sure. And I think, you know, KTM winning as well, this is... When they came into the championship, Stefan Piera, the CEO, was, you know, he said, "And within 5 years, we want podiums, we want wins." The targets were ambitious, but with the investment they've put in, with everything, you know, with and the rules as well in MotoGP, a lot of credit has to go to Dorna for this. It's incredible to see a fifth manufacturer, on you know, of the six on the grid, winning a Grand Prix and winning it in dry conditions and, you know, winning it with a rookie as well. It's just, it's an incredible story, like you said.
Yeah, I think that there are few things that need to happen to understand this, like, I mean, this victory from yesterday. One is that the regulation. The second one is the investment and the commitment from KTM. And the third one is those special conditions that we had yesterday. I mean, without any of them, I don't think that victory would have been possible. Because, I mean, without this, let's say, sporting regulations, it would have been impossible for a new manufacturer to reduce the gap with the top manufacturers without investing loads of money, it would have been impossible. And without those conditions, I think it would have been much more difficult for KTM to win the race. I'm not saying them to get into that dry condition podium, but to win a race, it would have been more difficult because, I mean, forget that the current situation is completely... I mean, it's not normal. I mean, Yamaha, the official Yamaha team doesn't really understand what's going on. Same with Quartararo. Same with Ducati officials. So same with Honda without Mark. So when I'm saying that those are specific circumstances, we have to underline that, but it doesn't mean that Brad didn't deserve that win. 100% full credit to him.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, exactly. You've got to go out and ride the race, and Brad was, you know, Brad was the best on the day. And I do want to give a mention to Franco Morbidelli, because on any other day, you know, that would have been his win. The whole weekend, Franco was just so good. I mean, we saw in practice so many riders struggling with the rear of the bike, a lot of rear pumping, a lot of rear movement, except Franco. He was settled the whole weekend. And, you know, for those first 10, 12 laps, whatever it was he led, you know, he was in command. And he, like you said, the other Yamaha struggled, Quartararo struggled, Vinales. I mean, Vinales 14th, you know. Full credit to Franco for what he did this weekend.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think that he needed this result after what happened in Jerez when he was when he was showing that he had like a podium pace, and then what happened with the engine. But I mean, I just spoke with one of his technicians, and he told me that there was nothing special on his bike, just a wet setting and a bumpy track setting. So I mean, it's a combination of things. And then don't forget, he was fast from the beginning. So when a rider fast like Franco is like comfortable on that bike since the first session, I mean, yeah, he has to be there.
For sure. And, you know, it is in stark contrast to what happened with Fabio, because, you know, Franco was on the softer tire. He went for the softer rear tire. Fabio was on the medium rear tire. And from lap one, he struggled completely. And it was the same for Maverick as well on the other 2020 Yamaha. And Rossi to an extent, but Rossi seemed to manage the problem a bit better. What happened to Yamaha was strange. And like you said as well, what happened to Ducati as well is just baffling. I mean, you know, Miller was the best GP20 in ninth. Dovizioso was 11th. And there you had Johann Zarco on a 2019 bike, third. They can't explain it. And I honestly have no explanation for it.
Well, I think the only explanation that they have, the only, let's say, theory that they have at the moment, because they don't have any facts, but they just have theories, is that new Michelin rear tire has a huge impact on this year's bike, mm-hmm. and then the fact that Zarco never rode this year's bike, maybe, and so he has no experience with the riding style with the Ducati, and so maybe it's a boost for him. It's a help for him. But it's as Dobby said yesterday, it's just a theory. They need to understand and they need to analyze the data from this race, which will be very helpful for them. And then they will try to reconfirm that in next weekend in Austria.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because we were both at that Dovi debrief, and what he did say was that he felt that what they found in Jerez, they sort of confirmed it at Brno. So it sounds like maybe, like you say, they need to study the data. They don't know yet, but it sounds like maybe they are beginning to find a way. But what Dovi said about this tire was that what is the setup he used at Brno was what he used for the past couple of seasons, which he knew worked, but it didn't this time around. So they know that the tire's the issue. But what was surprising was Pramac, because at Jerez, they were good on the tires. Jack Miller's always been, you know, he's adamant. He's never had any problems with it. So it's strange that they've got this.
Yeah, same with Pecco.
With Pecco as well. Of course, Pecco didn't race at Brno, unfortunately, with a knee injury. It's a strange one because now it seems, I don't know, it's strange because obviously with Pecco, it's sort of the same situation with Zarco in terms of the tire, but Jack has the experience, but now he's struggling, and it's a strange one that there's now this inconsistency.
Yeah, what Dobby yesterday said as well is that the last 2 or 3 years when they were having any kind of problem, they knew what to do to try to solve it. I mean, and now with this bike, all the tricks or all the protocols that they were applying to last year's bike or the bike from 2018 don't work anymore. So they need to change completely the approach to set up the bike because all the information that they have you can throw it to the trash because it's not working anymore.
Yeah, Dovi as well said that, you know, and it really isn't anything, what he thinks, it's nothing fundamentally wrong with the bike because the 2020 bike isn't that much different from last year's. But it's a complicated issue as well because Well, he said that you always do adapt your riding style to tyres. It's not a case of that you can just simply completely change how you ride the bike. This is something Cal Crutchlow said as well, that it's not possible to completely change how you ride a bike. So it is obviously something that I think it's a give and take situation. Dovi needs to adapt a bit more to the tyres, but Ducati also needs to find new ways of working. And with so many races in such a short period of time, it's not really working in their favour.
Yeah, the thing is that they need to try to find a solution, maybe not for this year, but for next year, because I think the sooner they have the solution, the better the sooner they will be able to ride again on front. So there's no other way than trying to find the key.
Yeah, but that's interesting you say that they need to look towards next year, because of course that doesn't really work for Dovizioso, because there's no, his future's still up in the air, and you have to think that, you know, if Ducati look at what Pecco's doing on the bike, and if he's not struggling with the tyres, so it means he wouldn't struggle next year. And how good Pecco's got this tire situation sort of complicates how they approach the Dovizioso thing as well.
Yeah, I know what all both Ducati and Dovi are telling to everybody about this contract situation. But maybe it's because I always think badly. But to me, it sounds a bit strange, because if after 8 years together, it's all related to those three races, I understand that Dovi is very pissed off. I mean, if he has to show and he has to to demonstrate his value on that three races after what he's done in the last 6, 7, 8 years, understand that he's really pissed off. But I don't think this is the situation at the moment. I think they are just trying to find an agreement, or to don't find an agreement, you know, in terms of money and the economical side. But I don't really see that those three races are the key. The result from Dovi and those three races will be the key for this contract extension, because otherwise, I mean, it looks very strange to me, and I would say unfair after what he's done in the last 8 years.
I would agree with that, but you know, we also know that there are certain elements of Ducati management that they don't necessarily look at the bigger picture. If we look at what happened with Lorenzo.
Yeah, okay. But let's put it this way. If Dovi wins both races in Austria, which looks very unlikely at the moment, but anyway, if Dovi wins those two races, it means that Ducati will give him all what he's asking for. It sounds very weird to me, especially if Ducati is saying that they need to cut, they need to reduce the budget on salaries. So I don't really believe that. I mean, if it's true, I think it's really unfair, because it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, if you really have trust on Pecco, okay, let's sign him. I mean, no problem with that. But I mean, no, let's wait and see what Dovi does in the next two races. Come on, this is MotoGP. I mean, you have a lot of facts, you have a lot of information from this guy, you know. You have many different ways to understand if he's motivated enough to keep riding at 100% or not. So I don't see they need any proof.
I would agree with that. I mean, if you look at what happened at Jerez, the race, the finish is there. That is very much what Dovi brings to the table. The bike wasn't great, but in the first race he got a podium. The second race he was top six. He's, what you get with Dovi is more than a good rider. You get a clever rider as well. And that that is almost more invaluable to a team than, you know, than someone that's just all out speed. Because to beat Marc Márquez, you need a rider that's, you need a rider that's fast, but you need a rider that's smart. And
yes, but at the same time, I'm not on Dovi's side. I'm trying to be neutral.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But I mean, at the same time, I mean, you're right on saying that Dovi was able to get the most of the bike on Jerez and to get that podium, the first podium for him in Jerez, in MotoGP. But at the same time, don't forget that Franco got retired, Pecco got retired, and Miller crashed. So he could have been sixth instead of third. So, and the picture would have changed completely. So I even understand the situation from Ducati's side, but at some point you need to make a decision. And what I'm trying to say is that I don't see those two races, the fact that will make you decide properly. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, I do. Let's talk about Zarco quickly, because, you know, it was a good weekend all round, you know, pole position, which sort of came out of nowhere. And then he held on to the podium, and there was that moment where he collided with Espargaro, which was, it split opinion, because, you know, Ducati were furious about it. And even Casey Stoner backed Zarco on social media. So Paul Espargaro, as you would imagine, was upset. But what was your take on that incident? Because to me, it was a racing incident as far as I'm concerned. But then again, I'm not race direction, so my opinion doesn't really count.
Yeah, I think it's a very sensitive and a very, on the limit situation, because at some point I understand. At the very beginning, I was surprised that about the race direction decision and the penalty. But then, if you analyze, when I did analyze the maneuver more, you know, a few times, then you understand that Paul is ahead of Zarco. So, and it is, as I said, it's really on the limit. I wouldn't say. I mean, the thing that Resurrection gets. I mean, put the penalty to Zarco, penalize Zarco, and then Zarco in a way admits and say that the penalty is fair. It gives me a good picture to me. I mean, a fair picture of the situation, and that I would leave it this way.
That's fair enough. I think, you know, we shouldn't celebrate collisions, but I think we should celebrate how Zarco took that long lap penalty, because that was excellent. That was precision riding at its finest. And what it did was it helped him to get that third place.
Yeah. Otherwise, probably he wouldn't have that third place. Rins would have had this podium. But that's what another thing. What Paul complained about, that this long lap penalty in this track, he said that it was like a joke, because he was losing like 2 seconds maximum in a race like the one in Brno. It is almost nothing.
Yeah, it definitely does need to be looked at. But, you know, just to wrap up on Zarco, you know, it was a day where KTM won. It was the rider that took his place at KTM after he left. But what I found really telling about where Zarco is now is that he had no regrets, couldn't be happier for Brad. And, you know, he said, he opened his hand and said, look, Brad's doing the job that I couldn't do in the KTM. And, you know, Zarco is very much a different rider to the one he was 12 months ago. He's a lot happier, a lot settled. And you have to say that for his situation, leaving KTM and going to Aventia, that move has now been justified. or is beginning to be justified.
But don't forget that he was the first one saying that Davinci was not professional enough.
Yeah, it's true. I'm sure he'd like most people to forget that.
So,
to his credit, he did again say in the press conference, I was right to doubt Davinci. So again, he's at least owning up to his comments. So
yeah,
that's one thing.
I mean, we are used to this kind of behaviors with Zarco. So I would say that he's an amazing rider, but sometimes he has a mouth, you know.
Shoots his mouth off a bit too much.
I would say so. And especially, I mean, the connection between his brain and his mouth.
Yeah. He's definitely a better rider than he is a diplomat, I think would be the best. Just finally, on a fellow Frenchman, Fabio Quartararo, I thought that was quite an important race for him because it would have been very easy with all his struggles with the tyres in seventh to chuck it down the road. And I asked him after the race, I said, look, was it difficult to sort of be calm coming from two wins to this situation? He said, yeah, it was, but you know, now it's positive that I know that I can't win every weekend. So that's this is one of these races that when you look back on at the end of the year, you will go, ah, this is one of the ones that helped Quartararo to the championship if he wins it, because it was the way he acted and the way he went about it was how a champion should act.
Yeah, I mean, it's 100%. I mean, it's much better to finish seventh than to crash. So, I mean, we will all agree that don't forget that at the moment he is fighting for the title with Maverick Viñales and Andrea. So Andrea was 11th and Maverick was 14th. So he's still got some points from them. So I think in a very bad Sunday, he got the best result from the three of them. So because we will all agree that at the moment Valentino doesn't have the pace and the consistency to fight for the title. So I would say that he has shown his maturity and in a really, really bad weekend, he was able to get a not, let's say, disastrous result.
Mm, for sure, it'll be interesting. He now leads the championship by 17 points, I think, from Viñales. So, you know, and this is one of three races we thought this might not work for Yamaha so well. Austria, the next two being the other two. But again, he looked forward after Austria. He said, once we get rid of Austria, we've got Misano, we've got Barcelona, we've got Le Mans. He said, those are our races. So,
I mean, don't forget that the first three guys on the podium don't supposed to fight for the title. So, not even Prince after what happened.
Yeah.
But you not never, even, but, you know.
But you say that, but you never know in this 2020 season, so anyone could be a championship challenger now.
Yeah. 100%. But we are three races are gone from, so we only missed 11.
Yeah.
So, and he's still there and doing the gap bigger.
Yeah, he's doing everything he needs to do. Austria will be an interesting test, I think, of everything for him. But that is this weekend. But on that note, we shall leave it there. Nice little cliffhanger for the Austrian Grand Prix. Yuri, thank you very much for your company, as always. I know it's been a very long weekend for you. Lots of late nights.
Exciting.
Yeah, well, so there's a lot worse things to be doing. Thank you very much to you guys, the listeners, for joining us. We will be back next weekend, or next week rather, after next weekend, to discuss what will hopefully be an exciting Austrian Grand Prix. It usually is at the Red Bull Ring. If you like what you heard, you can go and listen to all of our other podcasts on Spotify and Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts and all those places. Catch up with everything on autosport.com and motorsport.com. A lot of stories for you. We're going to be writing a lot of features this week. So enough to keep you busy until Austria. But until then, it's a very warm goodbye.